accession number 23812, wheel 17.
Mr. Doyle, Reel 17, you were telling me about how you managed to get a job at Beckman Metals Printworks.
Yes, as indeed did all other, most of all other prisoners of war, ex-prisoners of war. That's how they eventually found jobs, through these rehabilitation places. And as I was saying, the foreman said, would you like to smoke? And I said, we went outside and smoked. Then he said, I expect you belong to a union, as I've just said. And I said, no, I don't. He said, well, I'm afraid that unless you belong to the Typographical Association, I'm afraid you can't come in here. That was my first experience of the unions. And so I said, well, if that's the case, that I've got to join a union to come in here, I said, surely that destroyed the very essence of the freedom of which many people have suffered and many people have died for. He said, I perfectly agree with what you've just said, but if you come in here, when you go in there, those men who have been working in there for many years, many of them, they've been paying union dues, they've received all sorts of things by what the union has fought for them, you will come in and you will get that absolutely gratuitous. I said, I thought for a moment, and I said, yes, do you know, I said, I think you're absolutely right, and I'll join the union. And do you know, it was the best thing I ever did, because when I joined that, I had bouts of malaria, I had all things happen to me, happened through the result of my POW days, I had all sorts of tummy troubles during that period of time, and I was most surprised at the generosity of the firm I worked for, who paid my complete wages. The union also gave me a considerable amount of money. They looked after me health-wise and that sort of thing. So in that respect, I was most grateful to think that ex-POWs and that had the sympathy of quite a lot of associations.
Could we just take it to, when were you demobilised? What do you remember of the demobilisation?
I received a notification on immobilisation after 6 months. I received a travel warrant to go to Northampton. And it was and so I arrived at Northampton and I was demobbed there at Northampton.
In 1946.
You
don't know the month, I suppose.
No. Now,
So you then went to work at Beckles.
Went to work at Beckles. I had a happy time there.
Can I ask you a bit more about these illnesses? Were these down to your POW? Can you talk a bit about what sort of illnesses you had?
Yeah, well, malaria was one of them. We had tablets, what all issued out with tablets, which were called Mefricon. I don't know how you spell it or how you even pronounce it. Mefricon or something like that. They were yellow tablets and they turned you yellow. But I had reoccurrences of malaria. I even went off when people were given blood. I went to the place to give blood. They asked me where I'd come from, what that, and have I any illness? I said, well, not really. I said, but oh yes, I said, I did have malaria. Oh, in no way must you give blood. So that was my first. So I had bouts of malaria. I had bouts of stomach trouble. I was taken away from the firm one day with terrific pains and that, and they put it down to, I think with malaria, I think you get swollen spleen and that affects the spleen or something or other, I don't know. Anyway, I eventually got over that.
Did it last long, the period of illness?
I suppose about a year or something like that.
So not long?
No. I developed later on phobias, which when I'd left, I was at the print works for about a couple of years, and I had sort of feelings then of strange feelings when I was outside, you know, which I couldn't explain. When I got to my hometown, when I went out on the common lands, I began to have a certain fear. I don't know, I suppose open spaces or something or other. It's got a name, I think, about open spaces.
Agoraphobia.
I also, when I went to the local cinema, I was sitting there and I'd become drenched in perspiration. And I wanted to get out of the place, you know, but I stuck to my gums and I never did give way to it, and I came out. When I walked along the seafront at Southwold and looked out to sea, instead of looking out across a horizontal piece of sea and land, I looked upon as though the sea and that was down there, and I felt that I was going to fall into space and down to the sea. And I used to test myself by going up to the cliff tops and walk along and challenge myself to walk from one length of the cliff to the where the pier was at that time, a park pier. And by the time I'd reached that pier, I was completely drenched in perspiration, but I was determined to overcome it myself and not go to a doctor. And eventually, I overcame it. And I know I can go anywhere now, or anywhere after that period of time.
Because you never came back again.
Because I was determined to do it, you know. I didn't give way to it.
A physical and mental effects of it later in life? I mean, as you approach retirement age and afterwards?
Yes, some considerable years after this. I'm now 82 and approaching 83. It would be about 5 or possibly 6 years ago. I was with my wife and we had gone into a restaurant at Lowestoft called the Jolly Sailors. Whilst I was sitting there, a man came up to me and he said, "Were you a prisoner of war of the Japanese?" And I said, "Yes." "Well," he said, "what were you in?" I said, "The Royal Norfolk." He said, "So was I." "What one?" "6th Battalion." "So was I." And he said, "Well, have you got a pension?" I said, "Well, no." I said, "I'm all right." I said, "I've got a bit of a drop foot and that sort of thing." I had malaria. And so he said, "Well, you haven't applied for a pension?" I said, "No, and I don't intend to." So my wife told him he's a bit obstinate. And he said, "Well, I can see that." He said, "Where do you live?" And of course, I told him. The next thing I knew, that I'd heard from the Norwich, the war pensions place. And they said they would like to examine me. I sent a doctor along to examine me, you see. So eventually, the time arrived, this doctor arrived from Brightlandsea, an elderly man, and when I answered the door, he immediately asked me where the toilet was. He was limping, and I thought, well, if anybody need a war pension, you do, by the look of you. But anyway, he came, and he examined me. He asked me questions. He then took me and I laid on a couch and he examined my leg, which had got this big scar on and that, and he measured the distance that my foot had dropped, that still dropped, I hadn't realised, considerably to the other one. And he said, "Right, I'll issue my report." So he issued his report and I received another report to attend Halesworth Hospital. A psychiatrist expert wanted to question me. So I went to Halesworth hospital and was examined by this psychiatrist. The next thing I knew, I heard from the pensions people, I think it was Liverpool or somewhere, and they sent me a cheque. And I said to my wife when opening the envelope, oh, I said, look, though, they're sending me something by way of a pension or something. I said, it looked like £60. Well, when I further looked at it, I thought it was £6,000. And they had evidently assessed me as being something a bit wrong with me mentally, I don't know what. And also because I had received a war wound and that my foot was still dropped. And that they considered that warrant a certain amount of money. So I received £6,000 from the pension authorities, which came in useful, you know.
And now you get it monthly?
No, it's just one-off payment. Yeah. So that was it.
Now, the other thing is, how do you feel about the Japanese now? I know it's a difficult question for a lot of people who...
Well, it isn't really, not as far as I'm concerned. As far as the Japanese are concerned, and all their atrocities that they committed, how can I bear malice to children of today? I can no longer bear malice to them. I can bear malice to them who perpetuated the crime, certainly. Who wouldn't have experienced that? Having a brother-in-law who died in terrible circumstances, of which I won't relate to my sister. I had requests from various people in my town and around the area. Could I visit them to talk about their son? Did I know him and all that sort of thing? And I never at any time did I relate the conditions in which they died. And that I used to explain that perhaps I didn't know them and all that sort of thing. But if you're asking me what my feelings are towards the Japanese at that particular time as opposed to our own forces of the day, I will say this, that the Japanese soldier, he would die. He would not be taken prisoner, or very few of them would. He would rather die than be taken prisoner. It rather reflects on people like myself and that who were taken prisoner. Why didn't we die in battle? Well, everybody know that Singapore, and anyway, it capitulated because of the circumstances of the day and not because of we, our soldiers, who were still fighting. But this is my belief. If Winston Churchill of the day had said to us, our king of the day was a god who we must worship and be completely obedient to him and die for him because he is a god, would we, on our philosophy of life and our feelings towards life, would we have believed it? Now that shows you the difference between the Japanese mind of the day and our own. They believed that their emperor was a god. Well, what sort of mentality is that by what I've just said about ourselves? That is the difference between us, and that's why they were fanatical, because of that absolute belief that emperor was not a human being, he was a god. And therefore, as a god, when they died, their spirit would go to his heaven or whatever it was. That is the difference, and that's how I'd like to summarise what I've said to you.
You separate in that your view of modern Japanese, in other words, the children or the grandchildren of these. But how do you feel about there are people who are trying to move towards reconciliation with people of your generation? In other words, that Japanese of your age should be reconciled after all these years. How do you feel about that?
There is no such thing as reconciliation, because that's irrelevant to think of today's Japanese youngsters or our youngsters, there is no reconciliation whatsoever. There can be no reconciliation, as indeed there could be to murderers in our country who have murdered old people, who have murdered children. There can be no reconciliation. How can there be? So there can be no reconciliation that doesn't enter into it. All that the prisoners of war of today and their organisations have asked for is no reconciliation for the Japanese, only an apology for the very people who lay under the soil in foreign countries, Thailand, etc., who they have virtually murdered by their sadistic ways in what they were taught by their hierarchy and their military leaders. That there can be no reconciliation. There can't possibly be. How can there be? How can there be reconciliation? The British Legion, at one time, whilst there were negotiations going on between the Far East Prisoners of War Association and the Japanese to receive an apology and to make it concrete by some material means, by compensation in one way, but the main thing was to receive an apology for the crimes that they had committed. We are obligated, as I've said, to those who can't answer for themselves. We saw them die, we know how they died, and we, as ex-prisoners of war, all that we're asking for is for those in power to admit that those atrocities were committed and to apologise for doing something which they needn't have done. Now, that's the feeling, I think, of most prisoners of war. And when the British Legion, during the time in which there were litigation in relation to those apologies going on in the courts of Japan, that the British Legion were trying to send on an agreement with the Japanese government to send over people to try and reconcile and to receive reconciliation by the Japanese, I consider, and I expect many others do, it as simply a ploy while those legal proceedings were going on to try and allay that apology of which they should have apologised. They even wrote to the Sun newspaper, Hirohito of the day, asking for this to the Sun newspaper. I think, and probably others, if one were astute enough to realise, that the very reason they wrote to the Sun newspaper, not any other paper in England, was because the Sun is embossed on their flag. And that's the reason they done it. And I personally wrote to the British Legion, criticising them for sending people in a spirit of reconciliation, and it was published in the Legion magazine, my letter, and it was after that was published that they changed their attitude and agreed to try and get compensation and an apology. So I feel that I personally have done a little bit of good. So that's the end of my story.
Thank you very much. Well done.